This is RSVNB Update, episode 575, recorded Thursday, July 7th, 2016. Idle Adventures and Beyond. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the episode of RSVNB Update that you have just downloaded from iTunes or update.rsvnb.com or your favorite podcatcher. Dave is here, as per usual, this week.
Hello, hello.
And also joining us to discuss our core topic of the week, the RuneScape Idle Adventures closed beta, is Tyler. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You were on the show in the tail end of 2015 discussing... I honestly forget which update you were on. I'm sorry.
The Camel Warriors one.
Oh, right. Those...
those wonderful creatures.
Yeah. Does anyone ever go there these days, I wonder? Aside from comp requirements?
I have skipped all the tasks I've gotten with them.
Okay. Yeah, so... you got into the Idle Adventures closed beta, whereas Dave and I did not. And you're going to give us a bit of an overview later of how the game works and a new genre for the RuneScape IP, I guess. So that should be interesting to hear about. You excited about the game?
I think the beta shows some real potential.
Excellent. Anyways, let us begin then with the core update of the week, and that Vic the Traitor is back. Vic is back in Burthorpe. Should you want to trade in any of your bonus XP excess that you have in your skilling inventory, he's going to be around until the 11th. You can make the trades, and then the store will be closing on the 18th, 1 week later, where you can buy things, including the Rune Ethereal Divination Skilling Outfit, Fletching and Nimble Outfits, Starborn Diamonds to make the Starfire Outfit, and any of the other previous rare item outfits. And they also have on at this time some summer-themed cosmetics and emotes from previous years. You guys taking part in this and going to be picking anything up?
I'll have to check... look through myself, because there was some of the things that were just rattled off, and I'm not really sure what their effect is. So yeah, I'll do some research, and if I have some extra bonus XP around, I'll dump it in there. I know probably the better half of all my bonus experience is in divination, so I'm not going to be getting rid of that for more than one reason. But for any of the other quest rewards or Squeal of Fortune spins or Treasure Hunter keys or whatever they're called this month. I'll get rid of them. But the thing is I feel like the ratios are a bit off. And I mean, obviously they're going to tilt it towards people who have quite a bit. You know, it's not necessarily going to be catered towards the people that have just sort of accrued a bunch of stuff over the year. You know, that's... If you have 35k in attack,
that's not going to get you much.
It's going to get you like 12 points, you know, when most of the stuff costs about 500. So for anyone that doesn't really know how this works, it is sort of weighted towards those who really have stacked up the bonus XP and not used it, which is, you know, it's a catch 22, because a lot of people obviously are going to put bonus XP into stuff, you know, when they're training it. So anyway, yeah, I'll see what I can.
All right. You have anything on your mind, Tyler, here?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Dave. I probably will just check it out, see if I have enough for to get like one or two items. Most of my stuff is in Dungeoneering, which I'm just trying to get to 120, so I probably won't dump any of that. So,
all right. Yeah, last time I finished off the Herblore outfit, and for me personally, that's enough for now. I knew Herblore was going to be the next thing to do, and thankfully I have Woodcutting Lumberjack from the Temple Trekking when that came out many years ago, so I don't really need many of these outfits, so I'll probably skip out this time. The only thing I'll be looking forward to in the future when Vic comes back next time is the camouflage outfits for thieving. I would like to complete a set of that. I wasn't able to do that when they were around, so I am looking for that. Another interesting one that's in the store for you guys who might be interested in this is the shark outfits. If you want to be a shark and work on a shark set for fishing, so there's that as well. So a great time to pick one of those up as well. I will.
Yeah, I don't want to necessarily endorse something, but I would say of any of the skilling outfits, the shark is definitely going to be your best bet. Mostly because for those of you who don't want to combat invention, you know, you can get the, and if you're not, you know, 90, 91 plus and you don't have access to waterfall, it's really a good investment to get the shark outfit just to be able to fish. It's going to be a lot easier. You're not going to have to, you know, drop stuff like that. But yeah, if you're going to buy anything and if you're unsure of anything, the shark outfit is definitely the way to go. I do recommend that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll echo that recommendation. I just recently did the aquarium content and having the shark outfit made it manageable and not.
It really is game changing. And, you know, we say that about a lot of the treasure hunter stuff. I don't want to call it game breaking, but it definitely adds you know, it brings up the, I think it updates, it brings the skill up to date and it makes it a little bit more easier since it was one of the lowest XP rate skills in terms of, you know, paying attention, you know, not AFKable and it was still like really low. So I think it brings it up. So it's definitely something that should be invested in if you can.
Yeah. And as a reminder, the shark outfit increases the chance of catching all fish by 5%. It increases also with auras. It also removes aggression from the living rock creatures down there if you're doing that. Also has the option to consume any caught fish, which can be toggled on the shark head. And the consume option will not affect prawn balls or crackers or golden fish eggs. So, I mean, it is pretty overpowered. And then, of course, you can combine it with all the other fishing outfits as well. So I think this is definitely the time to stock up on these. So there's also the agility outfit, the nimble wear, which you can, I guess, wear if you want to be a nimble navigator. You get an extra 6% agility XP, which if you're, you know, going for 120 agility, that's definitely something you should pick up.
Absolutely. And so, it goes true for any sort of, you know, skill. If you're really dedicated and, you know, looking to get a 120, I mean, it's not going to hurt within reason to pick up the relevant skilling outfit for that. So,
yeah, indeed. And of course, also remember you can get Dungeoneering tokens from the store also, which seems kind of silly just given the ratio that I think those are 2-to-1 and you can probably get them faster by just doing Dungeoneering. Rare item tokens are also on offer, as are lamps and bonus XP stars. So, I guess if you want, you could transfer bonus XP between skills if that's your cup of tea as well. So, this week when Vic was coming back, the Jagex made a tweet basically saying, guess who's back? Vic again. I'm sure that's a reference to some song out there. It certainly rings a bell, but I'm not going to go any further unless one of you guys would like to shed light on that.
So again, it sounds familiar, but I can't exactly pinpoint it. I don't know. It's probably just another iteration of some poor British humor.
Alrighty. Well, that's the main update for the week. There was also the 4th of July celebrations where you could get your 4th of July gear if you didn't in the previous years, but there's not much point in talking about this because it ended on the 5th.
Indeed.
So we're just going to jump on straight over to the patch notes unless you guys have anything else to say about Vic.
I think that's it.
Same here.
Alrighty. So this week, a number of changes to rune metrics. Players without Rune Metrics Pro may now benefit from the low health warning and the stack value feature of Rune Metrics Pro. So that means if you're fighting and you get a drop, it'll now tell you what it's worth, so you can tell if you want to go pick it up. I think this was a kind of a useful feature. What do you guys think?
Yes. I've had Pro since it was released, and it's definitely amazing because I have always been one to not pick up everything just because, oh, you know, it's only 3 of such and such, and I can't be bothered to, you know, if I'm doing Slayer, you know, run around and pick everything up and then add it all up. But if, you know, if I see an actual monetary value on it, it's like, ooh, okay, you know, I'll grab that because I'm not exactly sure what some of the stuff is. And I don't, like I said, I don't want to price check it, but it's right there and it's at your fingertips. So it's definitely, I'm glad to see that it's more accessible to the community now.
Also on RuneMetrics, they added an ultralight interface option. So it's kind of transparent now, which is good for people who like to have it up but don't want to see it. So there's a story about this. But before that, I'd like to ask you, Tyler, do you have RuneMetrics Pro or did you invest in that at all?
Not at all.
No? Okay. Did you have Premier Club that gave you a 2-week free trial of it?
No, I didn't get Premier Club.
Yeah, same here. So there are some questions about this because they enabled RuneMetrics, the interface this week for everyone when the update hit with this ultra light mode. So it was kind of hard to tell exactly where to turn this thing off. So a bit of a public service announcement for you guys out there who might be looking to hide RuneMetrics after seeing it when you log in. If you go down to the action bar at the bottom, or rather the ribbon, you can just go into metrics and then turn off the various HUDs for RuneMetrics that you don't want. And then you can put it back to standard mode as well if you prefer dark mode for RuneMetrics. So that's in the metrics area of the bar, or the ribbon, rather. So there's that. And I'd also like to say that with this, they got rid of the classic XP tracker this week. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah, I was pretty pissed.
Oh, really?
Did they really?
I like having that, and I couldn't figure out if I could get it back after I got rid of the RuneMetrics.
Yeah, they did get rid of it. So basically what you need to do, Tyler, and anyone else who wants an XP tracker back, is you go to the Metrics tab of RuneMetrics, and then you can put any skills that you want on there, and then just open up the Metrics tab and put it somewhere on your screen, and then in either dark mode or ultralight mode.
The only annoying part about that I was finding is that I couldn't get the window to resize as nicely. I couldn't get it to sit flat against the side of my window.
Oh, okay. So it was ultimately clipping on something else then.
It was just too big. Like, I would want it to be right against the side, and it would be like extra space where it was like there was an extra column, but I couldn't figure out how to get rid of the extra column.
And, you know, I think that what we're seeing here is two factors. The first one being is that you have some extra columns in there that are related to RuneMetrics Pro. And I think, I'm not 100% sure, that if you right-click, you can hide the columns that you don't want. So you might look into that. And then the other thing is it's just kind of to do with the way the new interface system works. So, I definitely agree, though, that the old XP tracker was really minimalistic and got the job done, whereas this, you kind of need to invest into the whole new interface type HUD, I guess, is what we should say.
Oh, wow.
But there's also the ability to assign a keyboard shortcut in the controls section of the RS settings, where you can set a certain key combo to show metrics. So if you don't always want it showing up, you could bind it to something. I bound mine to backslash. Then whenever I want an XP counter, I just press backslash and up comes an XP counter, which is pretty good. Or if you have room on your ribbon, you could put it on your ribbon as well. So there's some options for that, but I definitely hear what you're saying with that. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the ultralight mode, it wasn't fully transparent.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So I think a full transparent feature would also be good to add to this, because if you're going to remove something from the game that, you know, has been a free feature for years and has been, you know, kind of rolled into RuneMetrics, you might as well try and make it behave as much like the old one did. So it'd be nice if the ultralight mode was transparent, I think. That's probably a good suggestion going forward here. But definitely check that out. And I was kind of happy about this update. I know you guys don't seem like you're too happy about it, but for the longest time since RS3 came out, I've been wanting a keyboard shortcut to toggle that XP counter.
Yeah, well, I can see it from that perspective. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I also think it's good that they're rolling it all into Rune Metrics. I just wish they would have left it alone.
Yeah. Because, what you can do now is you can put certain skills on it, but you can also just have, a running track of your most recent skills that you've trained if you want. So, it's positive and negative at the same time. And that's what you get when you have duplicate features emerging out of a software product, is that you need to find a way to kind of mesh them all together. And sometimes that's really hard to do, especially when one's a paid feature. But this is perhaps so far the most consequential patch note of July, though we are only 1 week in. So you guys can keep track on your update scorecard about that. Extended barge ability bind in PVM from 1 second to 6.6 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. That's
quite the increase.
Yeah, that's over six times the amount. Wow. And, I'm just thinking of Slayer, and if you're, wanting a creature to not move, you barge them or something like that, and then they're not moving for 6 seconds. So that's enough time to run away and eat. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Though, there are creatures that are immune to stuns and binds, so it obviously doesn't affect them. But for the creatures that do, you're basically holding them in place for the entire duration, because I think most Slayer creatures you'd probably kill in under 6 seconds if you're doing a lot of DPS.
Yeah, I think most efficiently you're probably two or three shotting them, so... Mm-hmm.
Fixed various occurrences within Dungeoneering that would close other party members' interfaces. Well, that sounds like an annoying bug. Any of you guys experienced this in Dungeoneering?
No, I haven't.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't go Dungeoneering either. Clear rewards can now provide between 1 to 3 pages of god books rather than a single page. I guess someone found out that with pages being consumable, there just weren't enough of them in the economy.
I wonder if that will change the price by too much. Because I think it might just extend the amount of people who use the god books.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And I think that's probably why this happened. Because if you think about it, the god books themselves are kind of powerful as they are right now. But who wants to invest, over 1 million GP for 45 minutes of a buff for the Zamorak page, which is what they're at right now. So they definitely need to come down. So this was a good change in that regard. And then this next one is something that I reported, and hopefully others reported as well, as a bug. Ceridoman wizards once again appear to guard clue scroll treasure spots. Previously, only Zamorak warriors were appearing, even if you were outside of the wilderness.
This is for hard clues?
Yes, for hard clues.
For elite clues, it's always gothics?
Yes.
Wizards? Okay.
Yes. If you get them. Though, I have had dig clues that were on elite clues that didn't give me a gothics warrior, which is kind of shocking. So... all types of Chinchampa are now reclaimable from a gravestone or from death in his office. We know how long Hunter's been out and what the fear was if you were chinning in the chaos tunnels way back when.
Or in the Apatol dungeon, as I did.
Yeah, because basically you die and you lose your entire stack of Chinchampas.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about it... why would it take so long to do this? I don't know, but...
One of those things, it's like, not necessarily was this a problem, but yeah, again, this skill has been out since 2006, I believe.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's almost 10 years. Oh, boy. Well, it's good to see that they're on the right track.
Now, existing keybinds for the bank, deposit boxes, destroy confirmation, divination within Daemonheim, and make X interfaces are now more clearly noted within the relevant tooltips. So you can hover over these now and see what the key is to press, which anything that's like this is perfect example of good user interface design. Because if you have a button that you can click to do something, but then, you know, you lose it in a news post what the exact tooltip is to accomplish the same thing with your keyboard, it doesn't really make sense having a keyboard shortcut, and these kind of things aren't really intuitive. Mm-hmm. So it's nice that they're doing this. Very good. The global broadcast for achieving 5.4 billion XP has been rewarded to state 200 million XP in all skills. So that's what I pulled from the patch notes. So you guys have anything else that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I do have one more from the patch notes that I thought was pretty interesting. Player-owned house workbenches now use the MakeX interface, utilizing fewer categories. I recently trained construction again, and I thought it was so clunky going back to the workbench and having to like go through this menu that it's only this type of menu that only appears at the workbenches. So I'm glad that they did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all goes back to, you know, and I'm going to, of course, sit here and mention it. Construction needs a rework. But anyway, yeah. from a higher level, I guess I'd say comp or, you know, going for trim. You know, obviously one of the best ways to get your rocks for the week is by making flat pack items. And yes, this is has been very clunky. You know, it's borderline old school interface, for something that's in NXT. So it's nice to see him kind of bring that back up to speed. But yeah, it's definitely nice to see him, polish that up, especially with content that's really kind of been stagnant for quite a while. So.
Yeah, and I mean, that also goes back to the era that construction was created in. Remember, this past month we talked about the Falador Massacre and how that was the result of some bad code management by Jagex, and that, you know, taught them an entirely new lesson that they had never thought of before for that. So that also, I mean, goes to construction itself and saying that construction was created in a time when certain conventions didn't exist in RS, and it was only a matter of time before you get to something like this. So,
right.
Very good. Anything else for you, Dave, in the patch notes?
Nope, nothing that jumped out.
All right, Tyler, you good as well?
Yep.
Okie dokie. Well, then, I'm just going to take a quick mention for the sales in Solomon's store. For July, a bunch of interesting things relating to rune coins. The Magician's Teleport is 60% off. Some wings are 50% off. The Sneaky Bunny emote, 50% off. Ozan Pack, 50% off. Flaming Skull, 60% off. And a whole bunch of others that you can find in the news posting here. Also some loyalty point things. Dark Magic Aura, 40% off. The Strange Title, 75% off. Master Jack of Trade Aura, Tier 3, 40% off, so if you haven't picked that up. And then some more titles that do that. So, I mean, we all have an abundance of loyalty points lying around, so there's no reason to not pick up Jack of Trades, especially at Tier 3.
Yeah, definitely.
And then for the free item this month, members can pick up the Windswept Queef hairstyle. Yeah, it looks pretty funny, though, doesn't it?
Yep, and it does.
Yeah, I might pick this up and use it.
Jesus Christ.
That'll be fun to see, Shane.
Oh, baby.
Oh, right, I remember now. Uh-huh. I remember now.
Indeed. Yes?
I remember now why you're laughing. All right. These are available until Friday, July 29th. And, that's when we find out what August free item is. So I already picked up my hairstyle. So. What about you guys? You guys going to pick this hairstyle up? I think it's a unique one.
I'd have to check it out. It sounds interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Perfect with going to the Ark. You know, have a windswept queef on your head, and then you end up looking like that after your ship ride.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, also speaking of the Ark is coming to RS this July on the 25th, and that was relayed to us in the behind-the-scenes article, so of course that is the headlining update for this month. We also have the Port Serum rework and the Port Serum invasion, all in order to get ready for the Ark, which will be coming later this month, and it at the end of July. So, you guys looking forward to the arc?
Yeah, I think it's going to be cool.
What about Port Serum graphical rework and the invasion?
I think it's going to, again, bring up, you know, Port Serum. I feel like everything around it has, you know, had its treatment of, you know, graphical reworks. We've had Lumbridge, we've had Valador, we've had Draenor, you know, so Port Serum obviously is next on the list, and I think it's only appropriate to do so with the, you know, introduction to the arc. And I think it's going to be, it's always, you know, really cool to see updates that, you know, introduce new areas altogether, because, mm-hmm. you know, as anyone who has played, you know, RuneScape in the past 15 years knows that it's not too often that we get entire new areas, let alone like new continents and, you know, something completely away that's not just some, you know, instanced quest area, you know, actually an area you can freely explore. I think the last one we really got was Mazcab, but again, that was just kind of like it was a portal away somewhere.
Yeah, it was mainly just for raids.
Yeah, it was just kind of a glorified raids environment, and this is going to have all kinds of new, you know, skilling stuff and, you know, Slayer, and it's going to be really cool. And it's, you know, it's going to tie into another piece of content that we've, you know, we haven't seen an update for this year, because they, you know, usually we've got our player on ports updates, you know, the beginning of the year in January. And as you all know, or I would hope you all know, you know, we obviously didn't get that this year. So I feel like this is kind of, you know, a prime example of, would you rather have an update every week or have, you know, bigger updates less frequent? So, you know, as in, you know, in trading that, you know, not getting the just the standard, you know, a couple more adventurers and, you know, a few more trade goods, you know, we're actually getting a full-fledged, you know, content update that's sort of, you know, based off of what they've created with that sort of mini-game style content. And I think that's really cool. So.
Yeah, I'm really eager for the entire exploration aspect of it and seeing how it all ties into the mining and smithing rework later this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tyler, you have any thoughts about the arc as we're heading towards its release?
Just very, very, very excited.
Yeah. Did you vote for it?
Yeah.
Okay, I did not. So obviously my level of excitement is not up to what your level of excitement is, but just the graphics in this place, it doesn't look like RuneScape, which, I mean, is good in a way, but we also have to remember that it's a brand new continent. So
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that in order to go there, you will probably need a level 90 skill, just like you need a level 90 skill to do ports.
Yeah, I think they mentioned something about that, to where, you know, it is going to be sort of not super high level, but it is going to be, you know, somewhat relevant to the tier that player owned ports is, because, you know, obviously you're not going to need multiple 90 skills. But I think what they said is, I think everybody will be able to access it. You're just not going to get the full potential without the skills, because you'll see all the adventurers there, but they like won't speak to you if you haven't like completed their stories and your player on port. So I think that's really cool. It's accessible, but it's still openable, and you know, it's a lot. There's a lot more depth to the people that have completed the content. So
yeah, and also in regards to this, Invention will also be having its bonus XP embargo lifted on the 25th of July, as we've been told in the past. So it'd be interesting to see how that works, whether it's going to be on the XP that you get when you're leveling the item or the disassembly where you'll get the bonus XP.
Right.
So
I'm assuming it's probably going to be the, well, yeah, see, that's,
because if you go disassembly, that's huge.
Yeah.
So, but we'll have to wait and see.
True. But then again, I mean, of course, I would assume that the bonus XP would scale differently, obviously being an elite skill.
Yeah, and you know, I honestly don't know what difference it makes at this point, because people had level 99 in, what was it, 18 hours. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the embargo, I haven't really paid attention, but is that always just a 6-month flat rate, or is it certain amount of time?
It varies based on skills. I think the last one was like 3 or 4 months for divination.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you for the help. Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're designing a Christmas jumper, you have a week left to do that. Tyler, are you going to do that?
a Christmas jumper? No.
Oh, okay. It's you seem like the kind of person who might design something like that.
I don't know what you mean by that, Shane.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Very well then.
Okay.
So, looks like an interesting month, and more on our coverage of this month later. All right. So, we've pretty much tidied away everything that we have needed to talk about relating to RuneScape for this week, and you guys are probably eagerly anticipating this next part of the show, our discussion on RuneScape Idle Adventures. So it's in closed beta right now, and Tyler, you got an invite to it, so you're going to give us a bit of a rundown on exactly how this works, and Dave and I are just going to jump in whenever we have a question. So I guess the first question I have for you, and maybe some of the audience has out there who, you know, isn't up on, you know, what the current kind of games are and everything, is what exactly is a clicker?
Yeah, so I guess the way I would describe a clicker, an idle game, is it's based on something where you can be active, and if you're active, you're going to ramp up your, like, progress a little bit faster than if you're idle. But at some point, you can only be active for so long because, like, you don't want to play this game forever. And at some point, you can idle, but you can still gain progress while you're idling. And I think that's where a lot of the appeal comes in that you can, it's something that you can just pick up very easily. I think the first clicker games were all, like, browser-based, not even requiring Flash. Like, if people know about Cookie Clicker and stuff like that, where you could just, like, pop on every now and then and be like, I had my people making cookies for however many time. Let me now divvy those up and upgrade things.
Okay. So, in a way, it's kind of like, I guess, player-owned ports then, except maybe a little bit less interaction?
I would say that... clicker type games can be more interactive. They're as interactive as you want to be with them, really.
Okay.
So you can just sit playing one repeatedly, or you can find your best strategy, setting up your people in the best way so that while you're gone, they'll make the most resources for you, so that when you actually want to play it again, you have enough resources to sustain however long you want to play.
All right, and then I guess then when you come back, you would ultimately have some kind of result to take benefit of and then move on to something else in the game, yeah?
Yeah, usually.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the basic framework for clickers is usually there's, you know, a main, we'll call it resource or multiple resources, and usually that's collected at a certain rate in real time. And basically, it just becomes a exponential and snowballing effect. You know, you will upgrade heroes or modules or what have you in order to increase that resource generation, and there's lots of different sort of you know, models for this, whether it be decking out, you know, a hero in combat gear, or if it's, you know, in terms of Cookie Clicker, you know, you can buy, you know, better methods of, you know, creating cookies, and it's obviously going to ramp up, and it's, you know, kind of an achievement based system. But that's the gist of it. So it's kind of just like a, you know, in every sense of the word, idle. But, you know, if you are playing, you're obviously going to get a lot more output. But it's kind of just a, you know, a snowballing type game that's definitely easy to pick up, and it doesn't require too much attention. So,
all right. And it's also worth noting that the studio who is producing RuneScape Idle Adventures is the same one who built Adventure Capitalists. So, now, what would you say the core objective, Tyler, is of RuneScape Idle Adventures in terms of its gameplay?
So the core objective seems to be discovering different towns. So you start off in Draenor Village with the Master Farmer telling you, like, so you're this... I actually don't know what type of person you are yet, but you're this type of blue person, and no one knows who you are, and you're just trying to figure out, you have like amnesia, and you're trying to figure out all about this world, Gyllenor. So the farmer starts you off by teaching you how to farm, and then
Got Shane's vote.
Yep. And then from there, you learn different skills, Each town will have 9 skills you can train in there and gain resources from. And then so far the objective seems to be to gather towns, go on small quests such as killing 20 skeletons in a dungeon, or getting 30 people to learn farming in a town. There doesn't seem to be a at least yet, a large
overarching general theme lore to the game. Yeah. All right. So then I guess a question I would ask, you mentioned killing, say, 20 skeletons. So you go on this task and you would just go there and you'd say kill skeletons and then the game would do it and then you'd come back in a certain period of time? Or how would something like that work?
So the interesting part about the way that combat works in RuneScape Idle Adventures is that you can't actually idle it at all.
Interesting.
So the generating... So there are two types of resources in RuneScape Idle Adventures. So there's skill anima and there's combat anima. And you level up combat skills using combat anima and skills by using skill anima. And you can't actually, so you can gain a bunch of skill anima by having all your skills trained idly, but you can only gain a lot of combat anima by going into dungeons and doing it actively. And so the way that the combat works is you go on your world map, you go to a dungeon, you pick 3 skills that you can have out of the 12 or however many so skills they've designated as combat.
Okay.
And then they're just buttons you press, and they have different amounts of cooldown. So, like, for instance, you could have melee, magic, and range. And when the combat and when their cooldowns come down, you can press them to do, let's say, 700 magic damage, or 200 range damage, or 300 melee damage. And then the opponents that you're against have health, and they also ramp up to hit you with some amount of damage. But the interesting part is that it plays like rock, paper, scissors, where it's just a combat triangle where your opponent will be, let's say in the case of skeletons, they're magic-based, so range would do twice as much damage, magic will do the exact amount of damage, and melee would do only half damage.
All right. So then...
And,
okay.
And then you just go through this, and each dungeon has... Some amount of waves, where each wave has somewhere between like 10 and 20 enemies that you kill, and then usually at the end of the dungeon there's one really big
boss type creature.
Yeah, boss type creature. In the case of like the Edgeville dungeon, it's a hill giant.
Oh, okay. All right. That kind of goes back to the early days of RS when you'd be going in a dungeon, you might encounter a hill giant you can't kill.
Yep.
That's pretty nice. So, all right, so we've established that combat is not really idle-based. So what in the game is idle-based then?
So all the combat obviously happens in dungeons instead of, like, towns. And in the towns such as Draenor or Lumbridge, you have people who are doing your farming, your divination, your whatever. And that's what you're idling, really. You're idling them.
You're idling the workers then.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I assume that when they finish a task, you get resources, and then you could potentially put that into combat somehow?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. You can... So most skills only generate skill anima, but there are very select towns that have combat, like stations. They don't really make sense. Where they do idle a single skill, and that one skill, although very slowly in comparison to like the... skilling skills.
Right, okay.
It will generate combat anima very slowly. So you can level up combat by idling, but the much faster way is to do it by doing dungeons.
Right, and I mean, obviously they make it slower because that's a preferred method in the game. Yeah. Now, are all the current RS skills represented in Idle Adventures, or are we missing some?
I've played the game for about 6 hours, I'd say, so far. And so I don't know if I've gotten everything yet, but so far the only ones I can think that are missing are invention. Yeah, I think invention is the only one that's missing thus far.
All right, well, that's so fair. I mean, it's an elite skill. Yeah. It probably wouldn't really fit well in there. So, okay. Now, you and I were discussing yesterday that some of these skills are classed as combat when they're not combat in the main game. What are these, and what do you think your rationale is?
Yeah, so this is a little weird. So obviously in your combat skills, you have your normal stuff like attack, constitution, defense, magic, prayer, ranged, strength, summoning. But in addition, they've also put RuneScape skills such as agility, dungeoneering, runecrafting, slayer, and thieving into combat.
So it's almost like they've just put all the support skills in with combat.
Yeah.
Or what they consider support skills.
So the way that the reason they did this is because they wanted it's kind of like something that people have noticed in game is that melee kind of has like in the combat skills it has its accuracy skill and attack and it's
you're talking kind of RS3 now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. RuneScape is in RuneScape 3. People have noticed that like it's kind of weird that magic and range only have one skill for them, whereas melee has two. And I think that the people at Hyper Hippo realized this and they wanted to make it more even. So in this attack, magic, and range, leveling them up just levels up their base damage and their cooldown.
Okay.
Whereas runecrafting, agility, and strength level up their like multipliers for their damage for their respective skills.
So runecrafting
would be leveling up your increasing the multiplier that you have on your magic.
Okay, and agility
for ranged and strength for attack.
All right, interesting choice for agility.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I agree.
Okay.
And then thieving works in that you can steal items from creatures you're battling, and Slayer and Dungeoneering allow you to go farther into dungeons and kill new creatures.
Okay, so
that makes sense.
So basically they are getting it right that Slayer is practically a combat skill, and Dungeoneering is kind of a way of exploring dungeons in the real world as if it would be a real skill in RS3.
Yep, Shane.
I concur. I like
I'm just pointing out the obvious facts here. I'm not suggesting that should be how it is in RS3, but interesting to see another developer's take on this. So, okay, so it's not, you know, let's just throw these skills in that sense then. So you said agility, thieving, runecrafting,
Slayer, and dungeoneering.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that makes sense then. And then everything else is just a regular skilling skill. So then can you level up, say, runecrafting by a traditional means of runecrafting, or does that have to be done specifically through combat now?
So you have to level it up with combat anima.
Okay.
But you can also have people who do runecrafting for you in a town.
Right. And I'm assuming that wouldn't be as fast as using combat anima.
No,
right.
Definitely not.
So that's basically what you said, where you can have a skilling station in a specific town and accomplish it that way.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay. So basically I think I understand now how the skilling system comes together. And then I guess from that, the next logical question would be, is that it's just a matter of game progression then, if I'm getting this right, that your skills are used for.
Yes. So there are some quests that you're given that there are skill thresholds you have to get. So like I mentioned, there was a quest where I had to kill a hill giant, and in order to get to that dungeon, I needed 20 dungeoneering.
Okay. So I guess that makes sense then. And ultimately, after you do these tasks, is there any accumulation of wealth or items or anything like that? Or is it all just purely based on game progression?
That's a very good point. There, you can deck out your character in items. In the beginning, you're given like some random stuff, like hard leather body, bronze dagger, very like traditional noob things in RuneScape. But the item slots that they give you are a helmet, torso, legs, a weapon, a shield, and jewelry.
All right.
And these do various things. Some of them affect your how fast your speed in doing skills such as woodcutting and stuff like that.
Oh, that's very neat.
There are some that increase the damage you do, obviously. There are some this is another point that I should mention. So like other classical idle games, there are these abilities that you can trigger at any time that have a cooldown and duration that allow you to do things actively more quickly. So for instance, in one of the first ones you get in RuneScape Idle Adventures is called Surge, where the text is click a skill to speed up its clock by 25 seconds. Works for any skill that's active.
Okay. So basically, it's just a way of increasing your progress, and
yeah.
You can basically stock those if you are wanting to, say, rush a certain skill to a level to accomplish some other form of progression then.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So now, based on your experience with other clicker games, is it traditional in the sense that it's paving a different trail, much like RuneScape 2 did before World of Warcraft came out, and RS Chronicle did in terms of setting a different tone for card games than, say, something like Hearthstone? So is Idle Adventures setting a different tone for the clicker genre like other RuneScape features did?
I'd say so. So I've played two or three different clicker games. I played Cookie Clicker way back when it was popular, and I played two others that are on Steam, Clicker Heroes and Time Clickers, and neither of those really had an aspect that you had to be active for. And so in that combat, to do any combat quest or to kill any creatures, you have to be actively playing Idle Adventures, I think, gives a new dynamic to the genre.
All right. And, I mean, if you look back at RuneScape's history from Chronicle to the NXT game client to, you know, a huge Java-based MMO that's free that you play in your browser and, you know, basically making quests about lore and story rather than go get X of item and come back to me, RuneScape has always been being different in that regard. So I think if they can do that and then apply the RuneScape name to it, they might have something here. Now, I mean, this is obviously very early days for this game. Do you think that going forward, this game is going to attract players outside of the RuneScape community that we have right now? And following from that, is it a game that anyone who plays RS today would be interested in trying?
I definitely think that anyone who plays either RS3 or old school would really enjoy this game. I think that it's nice that they bring back characters from the main games into this game to kind of lead you across from city to city. Like, you meet the Master Farmer from Draenor, you meet what's his name? The Slayer Master in Edgeville.
Vanaka.
Yeah, you meet him. You meet some of the White Knights in Falador. I think that it definitely has a lot of appeal for RuneScape players in that you get to interact with these characters and this lore in a different fashion. For people outside of RuneScape, I think that for people who already enjoy idle games, I think that it offers something really cool, and I think that it offers, like I said earlier, like a new dynamic. For people outside of idle games and RuneScape, I don't know if there will be mass appeal.
But yeah, because, I mean, I haven't really been appealed by an idle game as of yet, just based on what I've heard about it from you and other players around. It just doesn't seem like my kind of thing, but combined with the RuneScape slant and the various differences that you've told me, I think it might be definitely worth something that's trying, especially on mobile devices, because, I mean, it just makes sense that a game like this be played on a mobile device compared to, you know, on your desktop while you're playing RS. I personally don't like the idea of playing more than two games at once that use the video card. It just doesn't feel right to me. Kind of old-fashioned like that. And I guess that's an aside question I can ask you, is that how does it perform with NXT running at the same time?
On my computer, I would say it runs perfectly fine. I'm pretty sure that the RuneScape Idle Adventures does not seem very taxing. I can check right now to see.
Oh, you're running it right now. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I can see
how it.
Yeah, because I mean, that
was
taking
up like only 200 megabytes of memory, and
yeah, GPU usage is more what I'm concerned about. But
GPU usage. Let's see.
You know, back in the day, you would just run something like this and flash in your browser, it would be no big deal. But we know what's happened to Flash recently, so I'm definitely very enthused about this and have a positive outlook for it now, I think, more so than I did coming into this podcast, because, you know, it just doesn't make sense. A cookie clicker that you sit there and you click for a certain amount of time and then you do nothing, it just didn't really seem that appealing. And I was half expecting to have to ask you, is that why would I play something RuneScape related where I just click and go away? But they seem to have shattered that mold with the active combat, which is good.
Yeah. And I think RuneScape really benefits from going into the idle game genre with all this lore and characters, because they really make it really motivating. Like, they also, I can definitely tell that JedX has like definitely collaborated heavily on the dialogue, because you can definitely like see their humor.
Right.
Very prevalent in like how you interact with the farmer, and there have been a lot of cabbage jokes.
Okay. Yeah, and that's another thing. This is not developed by JedX. It's developed by Hyper Hippo, but JedX is publishing it, so that does mean they have substantial influence on the way the product turns out. Mm-hmm. So, overall, I am impressed with what we've heard here so far. Dave, you have any questions about it or any thoughts?
Yeah, there's a couple just little things. In terms of the skills, is it the traditional level 99 max, or is there not really a ceiling, or how does that go?
Oh, gosh.
Probably not there yet.
I don't know. They don't show. So every five levels you get an achievement, which changes how the skill works slightly, mm-hmm. and they go up to 95, so I assume that there's a 99 ceiling.
Okay. Okay, and then my last one is obviously you can passively train combat as well as actively. Can you actively train skilling, or is that only passively?
You can only mostly passively. You can choose to focus on a skill if you have the window, if you have the game open. So like most idle games, if you don't have the window open, it will still like generate. Mm-hmm. It will continue at the same pace as if you had it open and give you all those resources when you open it up again. But if you have the window open, you can choose to, you can click on a skill and it will increase its cooldown timer decrease its cooldown timer by, I think, like 20%.
Right. That's what you were mentioning. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it in an active way of training a skill, you just have to kind of put some thought into it, then put that on a mobile sense. You could have something like the Fruit Ninja thing for farming, except where you're hacking weeds away.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
You could have little events that pop up here and there, and oh, lo and behold, there you go. We're training farming. We're hacking some weeds away.
Absolutely.
And farming is in the game, yeah?
Yeah.
What are the benefits to farming?
It's the first skill you earn. So you don't get skill specific items. Everything, all the skills pour into the same pool of either skill or combat anima. So there's no objective.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So in other words, then if you didn't like one skill, you could focus on another skill entirely for for skilling anima.
Yeah, although in order to train people in that skill, it costs exponentially increasing costs.
All right.
So it's better to train your skills evenly.
Okay. Fair enough. And Herblore, is there any benefit of using Herblore in combat? Or does that not exist yet?
It does not exist with a connection to combat yet.
Yeah,
you,
okay.
You can train it, but you...
I mean, I guess I can see why for a clicker-type game that might not necessarily be a level of detail that is warranted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. So, obviously closed beta. And not everyone can download this and play right now, but it is active on the Steam store. So we assume probably we'll have some kind of release this year on Steam, which is very good, I think. Now, I mean, it would be unfair to say that this game is really good or really bad based on a closed beta at this point. So with that caveat in mind, if the game progresses at its current rate of progression, how would you feel in terms of how its overall quality will stack up when it's said and done?
If it continues at the current pace, I think that it will be an amazing game. So it just in the week that I've played it, they've went up. They've had a new developmental build, and just the difference in that has been pretty substantial, I'd say.
Okay.
So they changed something where... I mean, it was mostly bug fixes, but nice quality of life fixes. So there was like... clipping and stuff, so it's glad. I'm really glad that they're doing it so actively, and they're pushing it to the closed beta user so quickly.
All right, well, that sounds good. Anything else, Dave, that you'd like to ask Tyler before we move on?
Nope, I think that pretty much covers everything that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, so. I'm very impressed going into it as well. So we'll have to see when this comes into open beta and when I can get my hands on it. Definitely looking forward to an iOS version of this one, just like Chronicle.
Yeah.
Anything else, Tyler, about Idle Adventures before we move on to questions?
I don't think so.
Alrighty, well, should be an interesting time to see where this progresses, and I'm sure Tyler will let me know if there's any major game-breaking or game-changing decisions made to Idle Adventures, and we can provide an update.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so it's time for questions this week. We got one question and one discussion topic, so I'll take the first question, and it's from Wiley. Hey guys again, Wiley here. How do you guys feel about shield bows, the two-handed ranged defenders? Do you think they offer a meaningful difference in combat, or do you think that having a weapon gizmo and an armor gizmo with the brassican perk won't stack even though they are different gizmo types? Thank you for your time. See, my issue with shield bows is very much like my issue with defenders. And that is that I can use, you know, a two-handed crossbow or off-handed and deal more DPS. I don't necessarily have a reason to use defensive abilities yet. But as an example, if a shield bow were to come out and be a higher level, I think that might be something to look into. But my only concern with shield bows is that they just feel too slow compared to the other options. So, I mean, I wish there were more content where we could take advantage of this, but it just feels like, you know, if you're thinking old-fashioned magic shield bow, it just kind of feels outclassed by everything out there. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you guys think about shield bows?
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's... especially with the defensive, you know, abilities that we've touched on multiple times in the past. Very situational, you know, usually mainly utilized by tanks in high-level PVM situations. Not very useful in just more casual PVM or even Slayer, for that matter. Because, you know, obviously if you're doing Slayer, you're not really going to... you know, be using a whole bunch of, you know, you basically just want to kill as fast as you can. So I personally can't justify shield bows, but as Shane has, you know, said, if there was a much higher level one that maybe had, you know, a little added benefit.
Well, there's a level
something.
85 shield bow.
Right.
The strike bow, which you combine by putting the little doohickey from the wilderness worm on the dark bow.
Right. But yeah, I don't know. I think they're still lacking just a little bit. You know, I don't see the usefulness of it quite yet. Yeah. But then again, you know, take
it
my opinion for what it's worth.
Speed,
right?
For me, because I'm being forced to spend more time in combat. Because
exactly.
As an example, Here, the strike bow has a damage of 450 and an accuracy of 2178 with an attack time of 3.6 seconds. Now, I mean, we're not necessarily going to be comparing apples to apples here, but if you look at, for example, an Ascension crossbow, you combine two of these, that's got a 2.4 second attack time, 2458 damage, or accuracy rather, and is based on whatever kind of arrow or bolt you're firing from it. So It's that extra, you know, 1.2 seconds that really gets it for me. And it just doesn't feel as though there's a reason to use it outside of, you know, like a tank DPS kind of role.
Right.
I don't know. Tyler, what do you think about shield bows?
I have to agree that I think they're pretty useless.
Yeah.
In the game as is.
I mean, like, if we just look at the strike bow, it costs 58 million GP to get the worm scalp. 58 million GP. Whereas, I mean, if you're instead looking at an Ascension crossbow, okay, that's 56 million a piece, but you're definitely going to be getting a faster firing weapon out of that. So, I mean, it just doesn't feel as though it's something that is going to be a net benefit in combat. So, and, you know, much like everything else, if there was a defined role or I actually needed defense ability, sure, I'd use it. But because of that, and I think, well, I mean, I don't even know. I'm assuming that the strike bow being the highest level bow can fire the level 95 arrows as well. So, I mean, maybe in terms of damage, but it still comes down to time in combat because NPCs are going to attack regardless of whether or not you're firing. So I hate to bring up the tick rate once again, but it comes down to the fact that bosses have, you know, a different firing rate than you do. And if you can hit them when you're not hitting you, or when they're not hitting you, you're going to be in a much better position at the end to, you know, deal that final blow.
Right.
I wish there was a use, but I'm not seeing it right now. No. But, you know, maybe I think if you're in Wily's situation or you want to train invention with combat and you do happen to have a strike bow, let's see, is the strike bow augmentable? Yes, it is augmentable. So there you go, one perk each. So I guess that's something else you could do right there, is that this would be a pretty good invention training weapon. So there's a use for it. Meaningful difference in combat. Okay, yeah, and okay, yeah. I feel sorry for you that the Brassican perk won't stack, but I think Jagex wants you to get a limited number of cabbages.
Yeah, we don't want to get too OP.
That's right. That's right. And also, if you want lots of cabbages, just go do the Gower quest. That's a fun way of getting lots of cabbages, or hearing about cabbages too. So, all right. Well, I think we've answered that one. Dave, you want to read us the discussion topic from Parnassius?
Sure. Hi, host. This week, instead of a question, I have a discussion topic for you. We have seen a plethora of combat updates recently, culminating with the Telos being released at the end of June. Since the EOC was released in 2012, Jagex have really focused on keeping their PVM community happy, while seeming to neglect the skillers in the game. There was a time when combat players sought out smithers to make their rune swords and plate bodies and the like, but now skilling seems to be a function of getting max cape and not much else. Therefore, I put this question to the team. Is it time for the evolution of skilling to take place? Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Regards, Parnassius.
I'm not sure how I feel about that name. I think you might have a good portion of the community running if you market something with that kind of name.
Yeah, a little infamous there. Has a little bit of a bad connotation to it. Oh boy. No, I really like this topic, and you know, I feel like we've sort of you know, dipped our toes into this before, in, you know, equalizing out skilling with PVM, mostly in terms of rewards. You know, the high PVMers seek out the skillers, but the skillers also have an entrance or an equal opportunity at those, you know, said items. I definitely think now, obviously, it's going to take a lot of, you know, reworking. I like what they're doing and what they have planned for the smithing and mining rework. As far as, you know, an evolution of skilling, I'm not exactly sure how that would be implemented. I think it's an interesting idea to sort of overhaul. But again, you have to wonder how exactly they could overhaul it, because I feel like one of RuneScape's most iconic things or features is, you know, the skilling system and how, you know, you level up. Because I've said this multiple times before, RuneScape is one of the only MMOs out there where it's really more about the journey than the destination necessarily, because, you know, it does take a significant amount of time to, you know, to max a character, as with it, you know, other games like Guild Wars or World of Warcraft. You know, you're pretty much maxed within a week or two, and then it's focused on what is, you know, what you can do afterwards. So I think it would, you know, they would have to be very careful on how they sort of bring it up to par, I guess, if you want to call it, with the evolution of combat. It's interesting, but I'm not really sure how much they could do. I feel like skilling did get a bit of a, you know, overhaul with the evolution of combat. Obviously, we've seen, numerous ways to train different skills with the convenience of the action bar, convenience of keybinds, and, you know, what have you. I don't think that's necessarily would contribute to an entire skilling framework rework, or engine, rather. But yeah, I definitely think there's some stuff that needs to be done. And, you know, like we've discussed before, it needs to be brought up to the tier that PBM is in terms of just the ecosystem of the, playstyles. So.
All right. Yeah, that sounds fair. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I think that there definitely should be an extension into, like, updating skilling across, maybe not across the board, but definitely for some skills. I'm definitely excited to see what they do for smithing and mining. But at the same time, I think that it could still use more, in that I'd be really excited if, by using skills such as smithing or crafting or fletching, like we were just talking about, you could actually make weapons that people would actually use.
Yep.
And armor. I think that for me, the evolution of skilling would be something like just smushing down the levels as they are now, so that you can build like you can make like elder bows at like level 50 or something, and then be able to make something really, really cool and something that people would actually use. It doesn't have to be the most powerful thing, but it could just be something that is augmentable and
it needs to rival what you get from PVM. It doesn't need to be as powerful, and as we've touched on before, there needs to be the synergy between PVM and skilling.
For sure.
And, you know, an interesting concept that, you know, is obviously, you know, I'm kind of spitballing here, but what would be an interesting concept is to have all gear in the game that's craftable be degraded to dust, in essence.
Ooh,
so
interesting.
Because in every other game, there's some sort of upkeep for your armor, whether it be repairs or whatnot. But see, the problem that I'm sort of seeing and have noticed is once, and, you know, especially for the newer players, and, you know, especially me, was, okay, you get to the level for a rune plate body, you buy your rune plate body, and you pretty much, I mean, unless you're going PKing, you pretty much have that rune plate body, unless you either A, you know, die and lose it, obviously. But, I mean, pretty much you have that piece of armor indefinitely, and that's all. You know, there's being thousands upon hundreds of thousands of these items being made, and only a fraction of a percent of them are actually being used, as to where if you had, you know, an hour of combat in bronze armor and then it got dented up and was unusable, and degrade it to dust, you would have to go and buy more armor, just like you would have to buy food. Now, granted, obviously that's inconvenient, but if you, you know, went up in tiers, obviously it's going to last longer, but there's still that demand for the people to mine and smith either their own armor or for the, you know, the economy to, you know, the demand being a lot higher. And, you know, obviously these items and tiers would drop drastically in price, but it would even out because obviously the demand, there'd be a lot more volume going through. So, you know, you wouldn't have to pay 10 mil for, you know, a tier 90 degradable to dust ring or something like that, because, you know, you would need to keep buying it. So, you know, if it could be 2 mil, but, you know, you're investing in that, but it's keeping that demand. So I think that would be an interesting the way to sort of go about it, and I wonder if that would actually work in keeping up that demand, not necessarily reworking, you know, how skills work, but just sort of equaling out that, you know, the economy and the supply and demand of the relationship between PVM and skilling. So yeah. I don't know.
And I mean, it's obviously something that is on Jagex's radar because it was on the 2017 content survey, which really surprised me when seeing it, and I was really happy to vote for that option on the survey. So that's there, which is definitely a good thing, I think. Now, I mean, we're obviously focusing on the skills that relate to combat, but we also need to look at certain other skills that are in play. Like, okay, so when is agility going to get an update that makes it useful? What is the use for Hunter right now? What is the use for summoning besides from poachmaking? What is the use for, say, farming? Now, I mean, in the proper sense, we know that farming provides the herbs that Herblore uses, which is good, but the fact is that you can go kill various creatures and you can get more herbs in an hour than you can get by doing herb farming. Right. So, in a way, combat is overriding what these skills are for, and I think that's a discussion that could be had by Jagex. And I think that, you know, the game, I think, is definitely starting to show its age in terms of skills. I don't know if you guys would agree with that. Yes? No?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, it shows, yeah, its age, but like I said, you know, they have to be careful on how they bring it up to date because you don't want to lose that uniqueness that, you know, RuneScape has always had. I think improvements need to be made on the same model. I don't think it necessarily needs to be completely changed because you still have to keep that character of, you know, what RuneScape is all about.
Right. Okay. So now with that in mind, the fact that, you know, things need to be updated and we need to kind of see a bit of a modernization in regards to this, the question then becomes is what is the blueprint for this? Is it, you know, a massive rework in the same kind of way that we're looking at for construction coming later this or early 2017, hopefully? Or is it going to be kind of a, you know, just a bit of a polishing up and adding new items, compacting the levels like we're going to see with mining and smithing? I think that's two potential ways that they could go about this. And we might see either or combinations of both in terms of updating skills. And I have a preposition to make that the mining and smithing rework is, in essence, a field test of one way of, yeah, updating skills. And if we see the construction update come into game, it's going to kind of be the field test for a way we can update skills that are like construction, aka, you know, agility, hunter, and those other same kind of supporting skills. So I think that at this point, we need to be really hopeful and constructive when, you know, discussing Q&A options when it comes to the mining and smithing rework, and ultimately what could be put in place for the construction update. Because if these updates come into the game and they fall flat on their face and that, you know, they don't create a reason to use the construction or rather the mining and smithing skills, and then they don't substantially revitalize construction next year, we're in essence in the same position we were in before these updates hit the game, mm-hmm, which benefits no one. It doesn't benefit the players. The players don't want to train them. They're going to spend less time in game on those skills. They are going to receive less money because, let's face it, people are going to be spending microtransactions to get bonus XP in these skills. There's always the people that do. And finally, Jagex will have invested a substantial amount of development time into these skills in making sure that people want to train them. So, basically, the mining and smithing rework, along with the construction rework, are field tests to see how reworking skills will work. And if it goes over well, super. If not, look at Jagex to make quick changes to the mining and smithing skills after the rework, much like they've iterated invention this year. And hopefully that will set the blueprint to revitalize other skills going forward. Now, with that being said, is the point I can reveal one of the shows we're going to be doing this July. And that is going to be a show focusing on the skills of RuneScape and whether or not they're useful. We're going to focus only on actual skills, not combat. And we're going to say that, you know, if this skill was on its own and standing on its own, would it be useful and can it stand on its own? And if not, what could we do to improve it? So that's one of the shows we're going to be doing this month, is asking whether or not skills are useful and whether or not people have any real reason to train them. And if the answer to those questions are no, then the skill is in need of a rework. So I think that this is a very well-placed discussion topic, Parnassus, and I'm glad that you brought this up this week, because let's face it, how many of us here are at the very, you know, high end of our RuneScape skilling progression? I think, Dave, you're maxed, right?
Correct, yep.
And I don't know about you, Tyler. What's your status?
Maxed minus invention.
Okay. So practically maxed then. So, I mean, it's definitely something that affects us, and it's something that affects a lot of people going forward. And the question is, do you want to come into game and just look at a skill that's useful for training stuff with level 50? I certainly don't. So that's why we're going to ask that question. And I should also mention that Parnassus put together a forum posting on the mining and smithing rework with his thoughts here, which you can read on our forums. The link will be in the show notes, update.rsbmb.com. But basically, Parnassus goes through what he feels are the net benefits of the mining and smithing rework and some of the things that actually should be done with it that currently are not on the list. So we should definitely all give this a read. But yeah, very interesting topic and timely for you to ask this, because I've been thinking about this as well, and we're actually doing a show on it. So yeah. You guys think that we're in a bad position here? Is this just par for the course? That's a game that's 15 years old.
I think it's definitely it's definitely needed. I think that the, you know, as you said, the first thing that needs to happen, in my opinion, is, you know, crunch the numbers, you know, meaning shrink them down, I guess rebalance all the skills that need rebalancing, see where the game is after that, which is what we're going to see with the mining and smithing. And then, you know, if need be, then start reworking the content in terms of how it works and how effective it is. But yeah, I think that rather than just hitting everything at once, you know, like I said, you need to rebalance the skills, see how people react to it, let it sort of sit a little bit, and then, you know, you can do a bigger sweep and sort of see what the catch-all is in order to sort of bring them back to life, per se. So yeah, I agree. I think that's, you know, I'm very excited to see how the community accepts it, how they implement, you know, each rework. And, you know, hopefully it will be the kickstart and, you know, sort of the fuel to move on to the future and, you know, bring skilling up to where it needs to be. So,
alrighty. How about you, Tyler? You in the same boat or you feel differently?
I definitely agree.
Okay,
definitely
good.
Agree.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just where we're at. So who knows? I remember the day when you would have to make your own runes for runecrafting, and getting 44 runecrafting was an actual good thing to do for nature runes because they were so darn expensive.
Yeah.
So, alrighty. Well, that's it for questions and discussion this week. We're going to move right on to tech news right now. But if you guys want to discuss more about this or you have a question about something we just talked about, you can send us a question. You can email it to questions@rsbnb.com Or you can call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, we accept direct messages on Twitter. All right, so tech news. You guys hear about the crash of the Tesla autopiloted car?
I actually did not.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay. Well, basically what happened here is last Thursday, a tractor trailer drove across a highway, and then the Tesla Model S that was under autopilot crashed into this tractor trailer, killed the occupant. Obviously, they were going at highway speeds here. So the question that has to happen here is why did this happen, and what is ultimately going to become of Tesla for this first accident with one of their automatic drivable cars. So it says, and I quote, "Neither the driver nor the autopilot system identified the trailer and applied the brakes." So
I feel like the person was probably sleeping.
apparently he was on his phone.
No. Isn't this the person who was watching Harry Potter?
I thought he was on his phone, but okay. If he was watching Harry Potter, then that's fine.
I believe that they found a portable DVD player in his car.
Oh my.
Yep.
See, you know, this kind of goes to the same point that we have when we're talking about airline disasters, in that if you have pilots who are asleep, even though the plane is being flown by autopilot, the pilot still needs to be able to take control if something happens. And yeah. I mean, that's obviously the model that should be taken with these autopilot cars, but I just worry that, you know, too much will come onto Tesla because of this, because I mean, obviously Tesla deserves a portion of the investigation at this point, but so does the fact that the driver was distracted with a DVD, because if you have the controls, you should be able to apply them. Now, I mean, obviously the question is why weren't the brakes applied? I think it's a little bit too early to tell at this stage, but I don't think that the negative shadow that this applies on the electric automatic car business is a good thing. I've heard some people equate it to deaths in the early space program, but I don't think we should go that far.
No.
So, apparently 94 million miles have been driven without a single accident so far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you guys think probably happened with this? You think it was a technical error or...
Yeah, I mean, there's always an exception to anything. Nothing's perfect. You know, it's a shame. And, you know, like you said, it's probably not going to be the best thing that's happened to Tesla. And, you know, I feel bad, but I mean, it is what it is. And people have to realize, you know, this isn't like, oh, this isn't the second one off the line. That's, you know, the prototype, obviously, you know, it's been tested. You know, they're a reputable company. They're not some no name, you know, out of nowhere. You know, they're a very reputable company. And, you know, as you said, the amount of miles driven before an accident could take you to the sun, quite literally. So it's, you know, it's a shame. And, it you know, you never want to hear, you know, this sort of technology fail, because everybody's so quick to hop on the bandwagon of, okay, well, if you know, one out of 94 million did it, then you know, that's obviously going to give them the bad rap, and definitely going to, you know, I would hope not, but I have a bad feeling that it's going to put a hindrance in the sort of technology that they're using in this for autopilots. But, yeah. You know,
I mean, it definitely needs to come down to whether or not the car is driving the person, or the mm-hmm. person is merely an attendant in the car. And personally, I think that the second option is a better course of action than just completely relying on the automation. And right. I mean, there's lots of decades now at this point of research into automation, specifically in the sky, when it comes to this. So, I mean, they're probably doing this. I'm not fully up on this industry, but I would guess that they are taking cues from the aviation industry about, you know, what the best courses of action are with regards to automation. So, and at the end of the day, it's a human manipulating the controls. But it's going to be very interesting to watch with this. Any final thoughts from either of you before we move on?
Nope.
Nope.
Okie dokie then. Next piece of tech news is relating to something that we are fans of and kind of shows where the online video game market should be going when it comes to cheaters and exploiters in the variety of games out there. And this is something that was done by Blizzard with regards to its Overwatch game, which all three of us play. So Blizzard has filed a lawsuit in California against Bosslyn GmbH, a German company behind Watchtower Tyrant, a program which allows sorts of unpleasant and unsporting cheating shenanigans. Those include a radar that show where enemies are and offer aiming assistance. Bosslyn has made programs for most Blizzard's other games, and the American firm is accusing its longtime rival of copyright infringement, unfair competition, and violation of the DMCA's anti-circumvention provision. So, basically, what this means is that Blizzard is engaging in a lawsuit to, rather than go after the people using the cheats, which they ban, of course, they're levying a monetary lawsuit against this corporation that publishes the cheat, which is an excellent thing to do for a company like Blizzard. So hopefully more gaming companies out there will be able to take a path like this going forward. Apparently the people who use the cheat were paying £11 per month for their cheat package, or a €199 premium package that gives them access to the aimbots for an entire year.
Wow.
That is expensive.
Yeah, and I mean, amazing what length some people will go to get good at a game. But, I mean, I don't know if Blizzard will be successful in this, because they've already lost a lawsuit against the same company in regards to a bot made for Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is underlying two very key points here. And the first one is that automation will always make its way into various video games. There's nothing you can do about that. Mm-hmm. And the second one is that regardless of, you know, the amount of development time you want to allocate for cheat prevention like this, you're not going to do it unless you invest in a huge huge heuristics methodology to get your cheaters, which basically means look at the patterns of past cheaters and then use that to predict the future cheats. Yeah. So,
or hire current cheaters and bring them onto the light side.
Yeah, exactly, as Jagex has done before.
Correct.
They did both of those. And, I mean, there was definite reason for Jagex to do that, because the very core of RuneScape was at risk if they didn't hire the people who were making the cheats and they didn't, you know, develop the huge heuristic system that they did. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this pans out. But when games are played and in the competitive sense, there's no reason why a company like this shouldn't be able to hold people accountable for ruining all of our fun.
Yep.
So this is a lesson to all you guys out there. Never bother cheat, though I'm sure our podcast listeners are pretty good people.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What do you guys think of this specifically? You guys encountered any cheats in Overwatch?
I've been suspicious a few times, just with aims. You know, flipping around instantly and popping somebody in the head seems a bit unlikely, especially with some heroes. You know, it's definitely more prevalent and more obvious with, you know, the certain situations. But I'm really glad they're doing this. I want to say I wish they would have done this sooner rather than just, you know, obviously you want to ban the accounts, but I mean, I think the most effective way to go about cheaters is, you know, obviously take away the cheating programs rather than, you know, rather than just bailing out the boat, all, you know, using all your resources to, you know, bail out the boat. Why don't you just, you know, plug the hole? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so exactly.
I think this is, you know, very good and, you know, a first step into really cleaning up the cheating scene, especially with Blizzard. But Blizzard has always really had a zero tolerance policy with cheating. So I'm glad to see them uphold this with, you know, their newest game. So
how about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited as well that they're taking a very active stance against this.
Yeah, have you ever ran into any cheats in Overwatch or anything like that before?
Again, there have been a few times I've been suspicious, but I think it's just, like, some kill cams I'll be like, really? But I think it's just probably a client. A lot of people on the Overwatch subreddits seem to think that a lot of those types of instances are just, like, a client issue.
Yeah.
When playing back the kill cam.
Yeah, and, I mean, when you're dealing with any kind of network-connected stuff, that is entirely possible. Alrighty. Well, our final piece of tech news relates to a huge purple screen that users of Windows 7 and 8 will get if they have not yet upgraded to Windows 10. So, you know, everyone has their own opinion of Windows 10, whether or not it's something you should upgrade to. You guys will know that here at the podcast, we definitely think that you guys should update to Windows 10. You guys have until July 29th. To do that. Microsoft, though, in the final weeks leading up to it, is using a full screen prompt. The prompt says, "Sorry to interrupt, but this is important. Windows 10 free upgrade offer ends July 29th. And then it says, "Microsoft recommends upgrading to Windows 10, the most secure Windows ever built. The upgrade is free, and you can easily roll back to your current operating system within 30 days if you decide Windows 10 is not right for you. We'll check compatibility before starting the update, and over 300,000, or rather 300 million people have upgraded. Upgrade your PC before the offer ends." So, obviously lots of people at Microsoft wanting to push the Windows 10 update, and I know I would highly recommend it. Tyler, you're on Windows 10, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, and when did you upgrade?
So I actually built my PC right when Windows 10 came out, so I think I very briefly had Windows 8, like less than a day.
Okay. And what's your general impression of it compared to Windows 8 and Windows 7?
So I was outside of the Windows ecosystem for a long time. I had just a MacBook for a long time, so I can't really say my opinion differently.
All right, that's fair.
Differentially, but I do really enjoy Windows 10.
Yeah.
Just in general.
Yeah, and I've said before, if you have an Xbox, it's a no-brainer to update to Windows 10. If you at all are interested in the privacy and security of your system, upgrade to Windows 10, because Windows 10 employs lots of the enterprise technology that existed in Windows 7 and Windows 8 Enterprise and brings it to the home user platform for various security features. And when it comes to privacy, you know, you hear about these people, oh, Microsoft is spying on me with Windows 10, but there's an actual huge section inside the control panel where you can control the privacy at a granular level. So in that ways, it's actually more secure than Windows 7 and Windows 8, because all those are transmitting still whenever you perform searches or, you know, just in general use the internet. So there's that. And finally, if you upgrade to Windows 10 and you're keeping the same computer for the foreseeable future, it's the last major version of Windows you're going to have to install on that computer. So there's no reason why you shouldn't do it. And I mean, if you're still not convinced, there's lots of other reasons to upgrade that we could go through if you guys ever have any concerns about this. And I think it's also worth noting that you have 31 days to revert if you decide Windows 10 isn't for you. So there's no reason to not do it. I think it's something everyone should do who is a Windows user, because anyone who has used Windows for a long time will attest that, you know, stability of Windows in the corporate setting is something that Microsoft prides themselves on, and it can be delivered upon. And those very same features are coming forward to Windows 10 for the end user. So there's that. And then there's also, you know, the virtual assistant Cortana, if you like that kind of thing as well. And then finally, for all the privacy people out there who say it's not secure, well, I mentioned the granular privacy controls and control panel, but if you are against using Windows 10 for the reason of privacy, you need to ask yourself, am I using Gmail? Am I using Facebook? Am I using Google? And if the answer is yes to either one of you, those companies know more about you than Microsoft will know about you with Windows 10.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It's definitely something to think about at the wider level of the entire internet. And I'd go so far as to say is that if you feel that way, you should probably just unplug from the internet entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's been proven that your likes can be used to show who you are on Facebook. Gmail looks at certain words in your emails to serve up advertisements. Google knows who you are and what you're going to search for based on your search history. It's not hard to do. And Microsoft is doing so much less than that that I never really understood the privacy concerns about it. So, I don't know. Have I just given up all hope on privacy online, or you guys agree with me that this is sensible?
Oh, no, it's definitely sensible. And I think anybody that thinks otherwise needs to sort of open their eyes and realize, you know, what they're doing. You know, it's not necessarily a... you just need to be aware of what's going on, whether or not you choose to do it. You know, I am fully aware of the things that are probably collected on me, but at least I'm aware. And, you know, it's better to know what's going on so you can make educated decisions rather than just being in the dark. But I definitely think, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. And if the information is there, obviously people are going to want to access it or, you know, God forbid, you know, sell it. So it's definitely it all comes down to, you know, it's the end user license agreement with a lot of things. You know, if you don't like the way it's doing, then don't use it. But it's come down to the point where it's almost necessary in, you know, daily life and productivity that it's just kind of something that it has to you just kind of have to do. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. So, I mean, it's the unfortunate nature of the beast, but that's just kind of how it's, you know, been rolling down recently. So
how about you, Tyler?
I agree. I don't think that there's a reasonable reason to delay upgrading, especially for privacy issues when there's so much other stuff to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there are people that say, oh, my computer gets slower, my phone gets slower when I upgrade. And I mean, that might be true with the smartphones because smartphones are still limited in terms of hardware. So I will give you that on the smartphone platform. But on the computer platform, we're at a point where operating systems are so mature that they don't really get slower when you upgrade them unless you're really low on memory or really slow on disk space. And even with that, if your computer can run Windows 7, which is a pretty low bar these days, you can run Windows 10. So I'll just leave it at that. Alrighty, everyone ready for some other parts of the week?
Let's do it.
Okie dokie. So, in addition to the start of the month, we also had the Informer Roundup done by King Kulla, a.k.a. Patrick, in which he discussed our adventures through June, which basically goes through our discussion of the Falador Massacre, the Apple's WWDC event, a piece on Steam Vive VR done by Alex, and the Gower Quest overview, which was written by Colton, which, you know, we're so much fans of the Gower Quest. And finally, Mr. Bistro's piece we discussed last week on Telos, which gives you a good rundown about how to get started when fighting the so-called toughest boss in RuneScape. And then finally, of course, Parnassius won the crafting skill of the month with 5.7 million experience gained. Well, and that's bad. And then respectively, Poison Nova took second and third in that skill of the month. So that's our roundup for June. And you can find that at informer.rsbnb.com. So now how about for a current skill of the month? The divination skill of the month for July. What do we got here? Flash is in first place with 3.5 million XP gained. Tim has returned from his hiatus of Skill of the Months and has gained 3.1 million XP gained. So we got a bit of a race here going between Tim and Flash. And then Parnassius is in third place with 2.5 million XP gained. And then we see Dave here at number six with 72k XP gained.
Bringing up the rear.
Well, not quite. I mean,
bring up the middle.
Yeah, the middle. The rear would be under 10,000 XP gained.
Yeah.
So, should be interesting to see how this one goes, as it's a primary skill of the month, divination. Tyler, you didn't enter. No desire to train divination?
None so whatsoever.
By that chuckle, I'm guessing it's a skill you were happy to get rid of once you maxed it out.
Yeah, I guess I'm just in a part of my life where I'm not really into gathering skills right now.
Alrighty. And it's also worth noting that Flash started off the skill month with 123 million XP, and Tim has 28 million XP, so two seasoned veterans in there for this skill.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. I'll just say that. So, anyways. So, achievements of the week, we got one of them. Danker Triple B got 99 crafting on July 4th. Congratulations to you.
Excellent.
That's our only...
Well done.
Achievement of the week, but crafting, very interesting to see popping up on the board here. All right. So as I alluded to earlier, we have a couple of special shows coming up in July. We are going to be doing two shows. The first one will be covering combat, and specifically a look back at the evolution of combat and the 4 years since it was released. Because Evolution of Combat was released in 2012, so we figured it's about time to have another look at combat and figure out, you know, whether the evolution in combat was worth it and it accomplished its goals, if the changes made in the evolution of combat are still holding up, and what changes might be needed going forward to rebalance any of combat should it be required. And this will be taken from a purely mechanical standpoint. Granted, we did discuss how combat and PVM interacts with the rest of the game in a discussion topic here, but that'll be saved for another portion of the podcast. So you can look forward to that in a week. And then the following week, we'll have a special on skilling, and we'll be asking, you know, basic questions about skills and kind of what Parnassius touched on in his discussion topic relating to an evolution of skilling. And it's going to start with a simple premise. Is X skill useful? So we'll ask, is Hunter useful? Is Divination useful? Is Herblore useful? We'll answer those questions, and if the answer is yes, then we'll just move on. And if the answer is no, we'll take a look at it and see what's made it obsolete and what could be done to bring it into a more modern sense. So once again, kind of on the same vein as Parnassius's evolution of skilling piece of content. So should be very interesting to see what we come up with on the panel for that. And then we'll be returning to our regular shows discussing the week's RS updates at the tail end of July, covering the arc and unveiling the new co-host for quarter three of 2016. So that's what RSBNB update for July is going to look like. And the reason for this is that it seems as though July is pretty much a laid-back month when it comes to RS updates, and I'm going to be away for a couple days in the middle of the month, so I figured, okay, let's just take a bit of a breather, re-gear, and then get ready for the second half of the year and do these two shows that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. So that allows us to accomplish all sides of the equation here. So that's what you guys can look forward to in July.
Indeed.
Which one are you guys most looking forward to?
Skilling, I would have to say for sure, but I think that's kind of it's kind of obvious, especially for me, if anybody knows me in the community.
All right. How about you, Tyler?
I'd have to agree with the skilling episode.
Yeah, and I think that the combat one is definitely going to go over easier because I think most people who play RS3 at this time are accustomed to EOC and are okay with it, and we're not, you know, hearing daily barrages that we need to, you know, change EOC up drastically. So
right.
We'll have to see what we come up with for that, but that's just my hunch going into it, though I might be pleasantly surprised. All right. So this doesn't really happen that often, but you guys have a joint pick of the week.
Indeed.
So So take it away, you guys.
Okay. Well, if you have been living under a rock, I pleasantly invite you to, you know, move residences. But yeah, so basically, Pokemon Go kind of came, I don't want to say it came out of nowhere. It's kind of been, it's been hyped for a couple of years now, but it's sort of, you know, appeared out of a wild Pokemon Go appeared, right? yeah, it dropped earlier this week. It is very, I don't know how to say it, very anticipated, I guess. Obviously, you know, hyped for a few years. You know, there has been countless speculations, you know, in the development process of it being scrapped, of, you know, the company going under and whatnot. But it finally came out. Basically, what it is a mobile game featuring augmented reality. For those of you that are unaware of what that is, basically it uses your device's camera and then superimposes graphics onto that. So in this case, you know, you're walking in your neighborhood or in a park or something, and you can find Pokemon that are, you know, in the, you know, real world environment. And then you catch them. And basically what it is, you know, you, as with every other Pokemon game, you know, you play the role of a trainer, and you, you know, you catch your Pokemon, train them up. But the gameplay is quite a bit different from the typical, you know, Pokemon structure that we, you know, have grown to love, in terms of battling and whatnot. Basically, if anyone has heard of the game Ingress, which is basically a sort of a geocaching type type game.
Oh yeah,
basically,
I'm familiar with geocaching.
It utilizes in this case Google Maps API, I guess you could call it, or you know what have you. And basically, there are, you know, points of interest on the map in real time, and you know, you interact with those points. And so in this case, obviously Pokemon will randomly appear in different locations, you know, around your neighborhood or, you know, wherever you're at. You know, it uses your GPS, but there's also things called Pokestops and gyms. And basically Pokestops are places that you visit and, you know, you can gather items like Pokeballs and, you know, things of the like. And then basically... the other one is gyms, and this is the main battle structure of the game. And basically what it does is you basically pledge your allegiance to one of three teams. You have the yellow team, you have the blue team, and you have the red team. And how it works is these gyms are pretty much the main objective of the game, into where if a gym is unclaimed, you can, you know, leave one of your Pokemon there to battle to sort of claim it for your team. If it is acquired occupied, rather, by another team, you can basically battle through the ranks and try to, I guess, defeat the gym in essence and claim it for your team. And then if the gym is already occupied by your team, you can basically add one of your Pokemon to the lineup to increase its difficulty for people to defeat it, to claim it. So it's kind of like fortifying, you know, your own gym. But basically, yeah, it's an augmented reality game. It's a fresh take on the Pokemon franchise. Again, it's highly anticipated, very fun. There's a few features that are lacking in my opinion, but obviously it's, you know, 3 days and it's public release, so it's definitely you know, they're working on it, but you know, obviously they really wanted to get it out. Currently having some server issues for quite a bit of people, which is expected considering that there are millions and millions of people that are trying to access it at once, from a fairly, I don't want to say small company, but it's definitely not a AAA developer, so obviously their resources are somewhat limited. But yeah, definitely awesome, you know. And I've seen so many posts, you know, on social media and whatnot, and this is appealing to so many demographics. You know, you're seeing people that you would never think are gamers just because it's the nostalgic. You know, I would say at least 80% of my friends on Facebook, in particular, are playing this. And, you know, I'm seeing posts and screenshots from people that I would have never thought would be into that sort of thing. And it's just really cool. It's kind of a social.
It's going back to the very first time that actually Pokemon came out, and it kind of feels like it the same way. But yeah, very interesting. Tyler, what do you think of it? I mean, you are the huge Pokemon fan.
Yep. I definitely agree with a lot of what Dave said. It's an amazing game. There are definitely things that are lacking, especially on the server end. So on my morning walk into work, I was catching Pokemon while walking and going past these various Pokestops. But then I was very dismayed that, like, at lunch, and since lunch today, I really haven't been able to play it at all since servers have been down pretty much the whole time. But I definitely agree that I think that it definitely has a lot of appeal. It can get people back in the Pokemon franchise, which, as like a very big Pokemon fan, I'm very happy. I think it's something really cool to celebrate its 20th anniversary this year.
Pikachu onesie on to celebrate?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. Maybe when the servers are good, I will. I'll go looking for some Pokemon at the Pokemon.
And then people will try to end up catching you and not realize that that's actually you in the camera, not the superimposed images.
Well, that's actually a really good point. I gotta get a really good picture. If I could find a Pikachu of me
and a Pikachu. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be great. That's actually a really good idea. But yeah, I definitely like a lot of the design choices that they decided to go with. I think it is very good that they decided to just go with the first generation of Pokemon, since I think that's what people are most familiar with.
And that would help someone like me who's been out of it for a decade plus to get back into it, you know?
Yeah. I definitely agree. I definitely think that was a great decision. Although there are definitely Pokemon I miss, but I think that it's really nice to go back to the roots.
I know the first 150, and that's it.
That's good. That's all you need to know to play Pokemon Go.
Unfortunately, I can't. It's not available in Canada just yet.
Yeah. Soon, yeah. TM.
There's also something that's really interesting to me, and that's the Pokemon Go Go accessory, the Go Plus. Later this month, something you can wear, it'll vibrate, and then if you press the button, it'll open the app and allow you to catch Pokemon easily without needing to have the app open to see what's going on around you.
Yeah, that's one of my bigger complaints right now, is that to do literally anything on it, you need to have the app completely open. Not even background processes aren't enough. And that's really annoying for, like, when you have a Pokemon egg and you need to walk 10 kilometers to get it. To have to walk 10 kilometers with my iPhone completely open will kill my iPhone.
Yeah, 10 kilometers. Can you can you bike with that as well, or does it have to be walking?
I was reading on the Pokemon Go subreddit about how people were driving in loops with their car to try to figure out what the main speed was before it would assume that you were obviously not walking or biking. But yeah, in the trailer they actually show someone biking, so that is valid gameplay, although I don't know about this driving under 10 miles per hour thing that people are talking about.
Yeah, it seems like it would probably be dangerous.
Yeah.
Because there are speed limits and there are minimum speeds that you should try and keep up with.
Yeah, who would have thought that, you know, they have the campaigns for texting and driving, we're going to have campaigns for catching Pokemon and driving now. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and then imagine the next step for this. In a decade down the line, you have something like Google Glass and you're wearing the headset walking around.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting times. But we looked over one thing, and that is the fact that it's a free game. There are in-app purchases, apparently. I'm not sure what they are because I haven't had a chance to see that yet. But very interesting that they put this out for free. And I think it could be signaling the next step forward for Nintendo. So,
I agree. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that all the in-app purchases... Again, I haven't been able to explore it too often because of the server errors thus far. But I'm pretty sure it's just for cosmetic things, which is perfectly fine with me.
Oh, okay. Then that's good. I mean, I think that's the best kind of free in-app purchases, cosmetic, because you don't really want to change the game too much. So, but yeah, looks fun. And I've been saying for a long time they need a Pokemon MMO, but this might be the next best thing. So
yep, yeah. Hopefully they can really build upon it.
So. Holy cow, this has just been released yesterday, and it's already got 17,000 ratings on the App Store.
Holy cow. It's,
yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so there's your server problems. But
yep.
Exactly.
Yep. On the official Twitter, they mentioned how they weren't expecting so many people, and while I believe them, at the same time, I'm like, I don't think they realized how big of an impact the Pokemon franchise has had on people of our generation.
Yeah.
Though the last Pokemon game I played was for Game Boy Color, and it was Silver. So.
But this game appeals to you then.
It exactly, has those, it does.
First, yeah.
It does. It just like Idle Adventures will appeal to me when that comes out.
Yep.
Alrighty, well, that's Pokemon Go, available on iOS and Android. Just released in the US, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. So Canada should be coming soon. Hopefully. So, alright, sounds good. So, to wrap the show up, what have we been doing? Let's go with you, Tyler, first. What you been up to on RS?
Let's see, RS, I've just been doing a lot of fishing and inventing, trying to get my invention up, since that's my by far lowest skill.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty much been it. Other than that, just playing a bunch of Overwatch, going to work, and that's about it.
Okie dokie. How about you, Dave?
As you can tell, I've been hard at work training divination with all of my 72K experience for the 7 days so far. No, but in all seriousness, when I do have the time on RS, I am, training divination, just doing little odds and ends here, working towards, trim completionists and whatnot. And then outside of RS, I've been... getting a lot more into Overwatch, trying to get to the level threshold so I can start to dip my toes and get serious in the competitive gameplay. But yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. Staying busy, and hopefully I can make some sort of an impact on the skill of the month. So we'll see how it plays out.
Alrighty. Well, as for me this week, start of the month happened, so I got 95 fishing from the Oyster, the monthly Oyster event that everyone should do. And then those of you out there who do clues and like to skip your puzzles gave me 1 million GP by getting 3 puzzle skip tokens from the Oyster. So just a reminder to everybody out there to do your monthly Oyster. It's that time of the month. And then aside from that, I got 95 Dungeoneering by way of sinkholes, so I can start getting the Garageo cards in order to try and get the Herblore recipes. So... yeah, still going in on the Herblore front. Surprisingly this week, maybe my advertising last week paid off.
There you go.
The Super Prayer Renewal Potions were actually very economical, only losing around 820 GP per potion. It worked out quite well this week. And I do think, though, that Telos did have a bit of an impact in that, because whenever a huge boss like that comes out, potion and food prices spike. So I've been taking advantage of that. But aside from that, just been funding that with herb farming. So everything is going according to plan. But that's about it. And we'll see you next week for the first of our special shows. I'm not sure which one will be first. It'll depend on which one gets produced better. We'll put the better one out first and then go with that. But I'm thinking we'll go for combat first and skilling second. So
sounds good.
Look forward to that. And thank you, Tyler, for joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much for having me.
For the great information provided about RuneScape Idle Adventures. Looks to be a good game. And of course, Dave, you're always here, but thank you as usual.
Absolutely.
And with that being said, thank you for sharing your time with us, and we will see you all next week.
See ya.
Bye, everyone.